Welcome to our podcast. We're going behind the iconic blue signs of North Mississippi Health Services to connect you with important resources, hot topics, and information offered by our very own experts. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to check out Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Castos for more episodes.
Hey everybody, this is Chase. Welcome to part two of our episode on virtual care with Dr. Alfredo Morales and Lindsay Robbins. If you haven't heard the first half of this episode, we published it last week. If you want to, go back and listen to part one. And if you've already heard it, thank you for joining us for part two. We appreciate you on this journey with us, and thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Let's get back into it.
So virtual care and telehealth, you know, obviously became big around COVID just because of the demand and the sickness and the pandemic that we went through. But do you think that those numbers are staying steady? Are we still seeing, you know, large amounts of people over telehealth, and or do we see that slowly declining?
So, yeah, I can tell you the truth. This is my personal opinion, by the way. I'm talking about my personal experience. I am not representative of the health system or nothing like that. But my experience is, when COVID happened, you have no options. So everything was through telehealth. Of course, it was the climax of telehealth adoption, implementation, not adoption. Now, there have been a decline, but it is stable. I mean, in order for you to be competitive, you will have to offer telehealth services. Especially, and I'm just going to take a leap of faith, but you and I are millennials. Technically, millennials are people that are born after 1982. I don't know about you. But we're millennials. So we know how to use a cell phone. And the younger generation are even more used to that. So the decline happened for telehealth. But you know what also happened? An increase on virtual care, an increase on remote patient monitoring, an increase on AI, an increase on ChatGPT, an increase on mobile units that can provide care. Mm-hmm. So all of that came in force after COVID. So it has been a balance. Now, if you look at a hospital in 2010 versus a hospital in 2023, they're two completely different entities. In the past, the traditional model of care was you go to the hospital and you get everything there. Now, through the use of technologies and different tools, we can bring the hospital to you. So 100%, it has declined compared to COVID time,
right?
But it's pretty steady, 100% steady. My department keep growing and growing.
I mean, what you were saying earlier, I would personally, just because I am a millennial, rather see a doctor online. There's so many benefits. I can schedule online. If I can't schedule my appointment online, I'm probably not gonna go see that doctor. Because if I call with an appointment in mind and they don't have that, I'm going to have to hang up and get myself together again to see when I can get another appointment. The anxiety of, oh, you can't get me then, I'll just have to call back. So if I can schedule online, I'm going to do that. If I can talk to a doctor in the comfort of my own home or step away from work for a second, you know, that's convenience for both of us. It's easier. So I would personally rather do a telehealth or virtual care appointment any day if I could.
Exactly. I mean, there's, of course, if your condition or your appointment qualify for telehealth, because there's something that you will have to go to the hospital, I understand. But also another layer to that is that people don't talk about it, but I have seen it a lot. There's people that they get anxiety calling and talking with people over the phone. But you know, we have an amazing tool here in our health system, My Connection. So you get My Connection and boom, you can schedule appointments, all of that. And now that next year, we're going to be going to in the ambulatory setting. Now that next year, we're going to be a fully Epic House. I mean, that's a whole universe. You will have so many things that you can do on your cell phone. And I'm excited about that. And it's not because I'm lazy and I don't want to come to the hospital because I live a mile away from here. But it's because you can do so many things. And I have this Apple Watch and I do a bunch of exercise. So I like to see my numbers. And now I can link all of this to, well, eventually, to when we go fully Epic, to My Connection. And I can see all of that. So you have actually more control of your health. Now, if you don't want to face your demons and you don't want to see those numbers, then I guess that ignorance is blessing. But not for me. I want to see what I need to tackle so I can grab that ball by the horn.
So speaking of Epic, how will the Epic integration an implementation, excuse me, change virtual care? Like, how is it going to benefit virtual care?
I think it's a great partner. I think that it's a lot of the technology that is coming out, mm-hmm. usually integrates with Epic. But a lot of the things in virtual care are also done interact with Epic. So it's two different things. But what Epic brings to the table is something that will enormously help virtual care, because pretty much everything that we are foreseeing to do in the next several years will integrate with Epic. I think that everything will converge through Epic. And Epic is very user-friendly, so I like that. But I'll let Dr. Kilman talk more about that whenever he comes to this podcast, because okay. he's the one leading the charge on Epic, he and Rachel.
Yeah, I know just in talks of from the IT side, you know, we'll finally sunset a lot of old applications because Epic, and I know that will help just from a management standpoint and things like that. So I know it'll definitely help out in general from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is that there's a lot of things that Epic offer that affect my department, but there's also other vendors out there that offer the same program. Let's say, I don't know, to give an example, let's talk about telehealth. Epic does telehealth. They have their own platform, but there's also a gazillion companies out there that offer the same platform that integrates with Epic. So at the end, we are doing what is best for our patient population. And we spend quite some time researching what will best meet our need. I will say that we spend the majority of our time doing that, because speaking on my own behalf, I will feel highly irresponsible if I just stay like 1 week researching stuff. I interview people, I talk, I ask hard questions, I put it to test. And as a matter of fact, something that I want to do, maybe I'm advancing this conversation, but something that I'm going to push is for us to have a little innovation room on which on every type of technology that we want to implement here, I'll tell the vendor, send it. Let us play with it. Mm-hmm. Let's see how it does. Let me get different departments. Let me get nursing. Let me get operation. Let me get finance, everybody involved. So we can get feedback. So we can make a unanimous decision that'll benefit the system. So I would like to do that. I would love to do something like that. Maybe a little digital health center. My God, there you go. There you go. That's what we're doing.
Heard it here first. So one thing I really want to do is set the difference of virtual care versus telehealth, because you were very verbal about you're not over telehealth, you're over virtual care. So for me, and I'm sure somebody else who's going to listen to this is going to wonder what the difference is. In my head, virtual care is all encompassing and telehealth is one part. Is that it? Or do you have a better way to explain it?
Well, I think you explained it really well, but let me just to give some clarification. There used to be a position in this health system about director of telehealth, and other hospitals also have that position. The thing is that telehealth, I told one of my friends, he was asking me, he's from my country, he's asking me, hey, so what is telehealth? Telehealth is like 10% of what virtual care does in any given day. So telehealth is pretty much using any type of audio visual, can be over the phone, can be over a camera, technology to see patients. Now, pretty much what you say. Virtual care is the whole deal. I'll give you a few examples of what is under the virtual care umbrella. We got telehealth, of course, which is the famous one, our golden child, the one that is going to go to college. Then we have RPM, for example, remote patient monitoring. We also have AI, we have ChatGPT. And the way I like to define is virtual care is the department that use technology to enhance and decrease the gap between health in healthcare for our patients. So that's what we do. Every type of technology that we can use in clinical settings, in the OR, even to some extent to increase the patient experience, doing a digital front door, all of that belong to virtual care. In this health system, I think we're doing a fantastic job because we have telehealth, we have remote patient monitoring, we have, well, there's a few things that I don't want to say yet that we're working. We have virtual nursing, which is something that is just fantastic. I mean, that is something that is bringing so much value to this place. We are getting ready next year to do a virtual ICU. So it's so much more than telehealth. As a matter of fact, every day when I come to work, telehealth probably takes 45 minutes of my day. The rest of the time, I'm involved in projects that don't pertain to telehealth, but they pertain virtual care. So yeah, to answer your question, I was very intense at the beginning when people say, oh, you're Dr. Morales, director of telehealth. No, director of virtual care. Virtual care. If you don't know, then don't take that leap of faith, because you will crash. And I think that people now, for the most part, yeah, it's been a month since somebody called me director of telehealth. So that's good.
I think it was good to make the distinction in the beginning, but also that's how I remembered your name. It was Dr. Morales, not telehealth, virtual care. It had to be said in my head in that, because otherwise, but telehealth is just a term that non-clinical people know, you know, because it was around and telehealth appointment. That's all we heard.
I know, Lindsay, but you know what happened? A lot of people, a lot of my peers got burned out with telehealth. They had a bad experience in 2020, either because lack of workflow, lack of training, the different companies didn't deliver, the equipment failed, too many factors. So I wanted to disassociate myself from telehealth, because if I go, hey, I'm director of telehealth, all of their bad experience are going to come to my, oh my God, this dude is coming here to talk to me about, how's your microphone? Why don't you talk here? No, hey, I'm director of virtual care, and we're here to help you improve your life and be just better with this. Like, let's work together, man. Let's get the show started. Tell me, what idea do you have? So I sit down and I listen to people that come. I mean, I love when one of the providers, or anybody in the hospital, come to me with ideas. You probably, I don't know if you know this, because every time you go to my office, I'm not there, but
this is true.
My office door is always open. I have a little sign outside that say, in a meeting, out of office, be right back, do not disturb, which I never put because I think that's just too intense. And the other one, I don't even know what it say. But yeah, working remotely. I love that people feel comfortable enough now to come to me and talk about this. And I am a person that at least, you know, that my office is not here in the hospital. My office is in IT, which is like, what, half a mile from here?
Yeah.
But I come to this hospital pretty much every day of my life because I got projects going on. And I just love the fact that people, they know there was this person. I won't say her name. She approached me the other day. Hey, I want to know what we're doing with this. Is there any company out there? And I got excited. I know everything about that. I can tell you whatever you want. So we have a meeting scheduled for next week.
So you mentioned RPM, remote
patient monitoring.
Patient monitoring.
Yeah.
So how do we use that today? Is that like telesitting, or is that just a little part of it, or do we even use telesitting?
So telesitting, it will be something different. I mean, I guess you can put it in RPM, but to give you an example of what we have in RPM right now, home health. Home health, we are able to monitor some of the vitals of our patient. They have their outpatient, they're in their houses. So they have machines that measure different vitals on those patients, and those vitals are sent electronically to the nurses. So those nurses can go and do home visit and check on the patient. By the time they show up in the patient's houses, they already know the vitals and they know what is going on and everything like that. So we started with a small program with that. We signed a contract last year. It was not going that great. I'll tell you the truth. It was not going that great. I guess it needed love. It needed a stakeholder. And this is why I keep saying this, and I'm really thankful. This is why I like the support that I get from my leadership. Because this hot potato was handled to me. Hey, you know, your virtual care, so deal with it. And then Dr. Davis, he was the one that actually, one random day, I got an invite on my calendar that say whiteboard meeting. And I was, what is this? I thought it was going to be one of those boring meetings about, you know, things that have nothing to do with my department, but I needed to attend. And then it was me and two more people. And he started talking about, we need, if something is not moving, get a stakeholder, get somebody to have a saying on this. So I reached out to a good partner that I have here. At least I like to think it's a good partner for me, which is Angie Everett. And I say, hey, listen, this is, we're seeing six patients. This is not going that well, and we're paying for all of this. And then her team and herself, Kim Tudor was helping a lot, Amanda Hall, we all got together and through conversation and everything, we increased. And right now we have 37 patients, which I think is just fantastic. Because imagine, think about that. We're talking about in the last 4 months, we went from 6 to 37. That is just something gorgeous. And we're seeing that data. And of course, it helped them because we see what is happening with their bios. We see everything that is going on with them. So it's just something that I truly love. That's RPM. So Telesator. Telesator is, when I got, that's what I told you that when I got here, I think that Dr. Kilman's team, they did a bunch of amazing things. They Frankenstein at Telesator. And it was with software and hardware that we have. A few months ago, I believe it was in April, Angie Lambert and Kristen Long, the nursing leadership here in Tupelo, they approached me with an idea about, hey, we would like to see patients in the room, etc., similar to what you guys are doing for Telesator. Long story short, we took a trip to an organization that I will not say the name, an organization that is in a big city and it has plenty of financial resources. And to tell you the truth, a very, very pretty, enormous area, but I was not impressed. I was not impressed because everything that they're doing, we are doing it. Except the virtual ICU. But everything, we're doing it with maybe an eighth of the cost that they have spent. So I wanted to do that for a long time. We are doing Telesator. And then that grow for virtual nursing. So now we're fully live with 95 beds. And we're about to expand to 100, another 100. We're going to have almost 200 beds on which we can do virtual nursing. And Telesator has expanded outside of Tupelo. We have Telesator patients. Right now, I was in the command center and I was able to see how we have patients in Eupora. Eupora is like an hour and a half from here. We have patients in West Point, which is an hour from here. And we have patients in Tupelo. So we have one Telesator sitting down looking at eight different patients. I mean, not all the time we have the eight patients. But do you know all the time that that's safe? All the financial resources that that's safe? How safe the patient are? Because we have somebody that have direct conversation with them. She or he can pick up the phone and call West Point, call Eupora. Hey, this is happening. So it is fantastic. And then if you put on top of that virtual nursing, which what we have, for those of you that are listening, we have cameras and microphones in different patient rooms. So we have this fantastic and experienced nurses, usually ICU nurses, that they are in a command center with a multiple screen in front of them, and they can connect to the patient room. They can do admission, they can do discharge, they can do education. But we also have more plans for that in the future that when I get invited to this podcast again, I will reveal the second stage of this.
So how many patients can one nurse watch?
For virtual nursing?
Yes.
Sorry, for Telesator?
Yes.
So they're not nurses.
Okay.
The ladies and gentlemen that we have, I believe they're nurse assistant.
Okay.
CNA, certified nurse assistant. And right now we have 10, but they can see eight. They can see eight. They feel really comfortable. We also, if they need more, we can increase. A lot of health system, they have one person seeing between 14 and 16. So that's, because of the space that we have right now, that's what we're looking at it. But if I get a phone call today, hey, Dr. Morales, Amory, one of our hospitals, would like to do this, it will take me half an hour to expand that to more. Because it's something that I no longer have to sell. Because we have seen how this have increased everything. And now we are partnering with this new company that in the next month, we're going to be going live. And for virtual nursing, we will also have the option to have night vision camera. I mean, I'm talking,
wow,
it's pitch black. You can see everything. And then the camera has a zoom capability that is fantastic. I mean, I can zoom in your face and I can see the pores from your skin and the follicle and the hair coming out. So it is flawless. It's fantastic. So the good thing is that through that also, let's say, God forbid, that COVID 3.0 mm-hmm. come to surface and we have to go into lockdown. Family, imagine what we didn't have during COVID. People couldn't see their loved one that were in the hospital.
Right
now, through all of this, you can connect to a virtual room and you can see your loved one and you can talk to them through the camera. And it's just something that it makes you, I love the fact that technology and some people may disagree with this, but technology is decreasing that gap and it's bringing the human factor into this. And despite the fact that I'm virtual care and people think that I'm like super techie and all that stuff, my friend, I do a lot of mission trips. And I do believe that we need to be humans above all. And if we can bring technology alongside the human aspect, I think that's the only way for us to be successful. And for me to go to sleep with a clean conscience at night as well, that helps a lot. I need to sleep. I got three kids.
So we see the benefit from a clinical and a medical side. What do our patients say about this? Are they happy with, you know, the quick care and that someone, they can speak to someone directly right then, or are they wanting more face-to-face interactions?
Well, you know, it depends. It depends on the experiences that they have in the past. If they have bad experience, they're going to be very reluctant to try telehealth. But I can tell you, if patients are listening to this, we're pretty good in telehealth. You set up an appointment in ambulatory using my connection, boom, 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 we will see you. And you can have all of your lab results. You can schedule an appointment, all of that, to my connection, MyChart. So some patients, I will say, and I would like to think that people would like to do telehealth. But to be realistic, that depends usually on the age demographic of that population. I can ask I have an aunt. She's almost 80. She would never in like a gazillion years do telehealth just because she just don't feel comfortable. But if I ask you right now, you will probably get your phone right now and boom, boom, and book that appointment, and that's it. The good thing is that we're offering, and people keep booking appointments. I mean, we haven't had a time that, oh my God, people are not booking appointments. They're booking appointments. We have a clinic in Maven, which is south of us in Tupelo, and we have a partnership with Jackson, Mississippi. And we're using RPM, remote patient monitoring. And Jackson and us, we can track all of that, all of those vitals, and provide a good level of care. But yeah, that's not telehealth, but that is virtual care.
Right.
So if 1 month telehealth is going kind of slow, yeah, we compensate with RPN, virtual nursing, etc. But I feel really comfortable to say that it's very constant. The amount of people scheduling visits is just very constant. Like, I mean, I'm not the best one because I'm the director of this, but I only schedule my appointment online. I don't pick up that phone and call someone. I do it online, pam, pam, done. Keep watching Netflix.
Yeah, I'm the same way. When we lived in St. Louis, everything, doctors, everything was online. And then moving back to Mississippi, a lot of times places don't have websites, online scheduling. I'm like, I don't want to call.
I know, Lacey. Well, you know, I think we're getting better. And I say this, I feel that the leadership in this place, they know. They know. They know what we need to do. I mean, look how virtual nursing moved fast. They knew the need. They saw the need, and they provided options. So I feel pretty happy, and I really feel that we are capitalizing on the fact that we're the largest rural health system. And I think we should put that on our slogan, North Mississippi Health Services, largest rural health system in America. That's what we need to do.
I get what you're saying, though, about attitudes of virtual care and telehealth, because me and my mom have two different thoughts on it. Because, you know, now insurance prefers you to do, you know, online, at least our insurance. It makes you go through a list of questions to see, do you qualify for a telehealth appointment? And, you know, I was talking with my mom yesterday, and she tried to get an appointment, and she scheduled an appointment, and no one ever called her. And so she automatically and it wasn't with this hospital or anything like that, because she doesn't live here, but still she kind of had a negative thought about it. And me, I'm like, oh, I talked to somebody and they were able to send me, you know, a prescription number for this. And I talked to them within 20 minutes.
Exactly. It's perception. I mean, think about it. If you go to a new restaurant and your experience is pretty bad, it's going to take you a lot. And then let's say that it was expensive too.
Right.
It's going to take a lot of effort for you to go back. Like, you're probably going to decline a few times. I'm fine. Let's go to a different place. So it only takes, in Spanish, we have a saying, and I can't translate this to English. It will be too difficult for me. But it's pretty much, if you are good for 10 years, people will, oh, yeah, that's nice. But if you're bad for 1 month, people will never let that go.
Right.
So that's the thing. Unfortunately, if we don't deliver in a consistent way, we will have to fight hard to change that mentality. And I think we're doing it step by step.
Have we been able to really capitalize on the nursing shortage with virtual nursing?
Absolutely. Number one, we took time out of the nurses are on the floor that they have to actually go and do admission and discharge. To give you an idea, a proper discharge, you know, in theory, should take between 20 to 30 minutes. But the whole country is facing a nursing shortage right now.
Right.
So our time was not like that. And there is a direct correlation between, not, let me put it this way, there is a direct correlation in the time that somebody takes to do a discharge versus the possible readmission in less than 30 days. Because imagine, let's add to this that you are on medications. And if you want to make it more complicated, English is not your first language. There is no one hospital in the United States that don't have patients that English is not their first language. The most diverse country in the world is the United States. So pull all of that. Hey, Dr. Morales, you're going to have to take this every 2 hours, then this, then that. Then by the way, you have to sign this, then this is whatever. This is your next appointment. I'll get overwhelmed. Oh, okay, lady, I fall asleep. So we have been able to take that time, to give that time back to the nurses around the floor. And now these nurses from Birds for Nursing are able to take all of this. And I love it, because now the nurses on the floor, they go to the computer, hey, this patient in room, I don't know, 365 is ready to go. Birds for Nursing go, bing, connect to the room, talk to the patient. But that's just the first layer of the onion. We have more plans. We have plans in the future to potentially recruit new grads. And when they go to a patient room, they will have an extremely experienced virtual nurse looking at that new grad, and the new grad can ask questions. So you're gonna have a mentor with you that can see you, that can hear you, and that if you need help, she or he can go, or they can send somebody. So that's what I'm saying, that this is just something that is fantastic. And I can tell you that at the beginning, like everybody, nobody likes changes. At the beginning, there was resistance. But that resistance is gone. Nobody say, do you remember when I was against it? No. Oh, Dr. Morales, I love this. And I love that you love it.
So what do you think the future is for virtual care? Are we trying to expand our region of care, or are we trying to up our services of virtual care, all of the above? What do you think?
Well, you know, that's a loaded question, because what I think, I'm not included in those very high-end conversations.
What?
Oh, no, I'm just a little director that lives in Tupelo. No, but jokes aside, what I think of this is that the traditional hospital, which when the patient go, becomes an inpatient, get everything there, yeah, that's gone. We are in an era that you want to do the majority of things that you can do as an outpatient, ambulatory, you will go ahead and try to do it. But we also have things that you will need to be inpatient. Like I said before, virtual care will always be present to make those two aspects of healthcare, inpatient and outpatient, easier through the use of tools and technology to achieve that. Now, when I think about the future of virtual care, I think about more remote patient monitoring. For example, there is technology out there. I've been in demo. I know it's out there. Places are using it. On which one, you're on a telehealth visit with me. Let's say I'm your doctor. You look at your phone. Your phone, through technology, can tell me your heart rate, SpO2, your blood pressure, your level of stress. And there is even some studies. No, not study. There's even some beta program that can tell me your glucose level through all of that.
Wow.
So right now we're taking baby steps, because a lot of health, the majority of health systems are not early adopters. But between RPM, mobile clinics, which is you can have a vehicle on which one is connected, we have telehealth technology, you can go to a particular place and you can offer a mobile clinic to do all of that. That's one thing. Telehealth with more peripherals, AI to simplify the documentation that a lot of the providers are doing. And I'm not even talking about the magnificent things that are happening in the OR. So everything that we're doing, absolutely everything that we're doing right now, I want to keep doing it, but I want to expand in all of those. I want to separate from the traditional system, which I think we are, that everything is inpatient, and just, instead of the patient coming here, let's bring everything to the patient. And the patient will come here when they actually need it, through technology, of course.
So one thing, this might be a curveball because I didn't talk about this beforehand, but me and you have had a side conversation after an all hands one time about bringing virtual care to domestic violence shelters. And I want to bring this up because I think it is an excellent thing. And I just want you to talk more about it and what you're doing in these shelters.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. There was an organization that reached out to us, and they was put in contact with me for domestic violence victims in the state of Mississippi. And it was through a grant. Telehealth is the way to go. I mean, think about it. When you are, usually, there's a high percentage that the domestic violence victim, they don't, well, I'm not going to go into the details about the psychological aspect, but a lot of the time, you need a safe space for you to have that type of conversation with a provider, for you to reach, right. if you're brave enough to reach help, then telehealth should be the way to go, because you can go to a place that it may be incognito, it may be undercover, and you can have, you can get the help that you need through telehealth. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you asked that question, because outside of the hospital setting, of a traditional hospital setting, we can do telehealth for that. Imagine what we can provide. And I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about psychiatry, for example. There's right. a lot of people that are taking medication for mental health, mm-hmm. and they're pretty remote. And when you tell those patients, hey, you're going to have to get in a car and drive 2 hours to do this, if they qualify through telehealth, and as a matter of fact, the federal government just extended that, you can get your prescription. So I think, and this is what I say, and maybe I'm romanticizing this, but it's something that I don't want to lose. I always want to put the human aspect above everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel that if what I can bring to this organization can directly or indirectly affect in a better way the life of our patient, he's better. Because listen, my friend, karma, the world goes around. I like to ride my bicycle. What about if I get a flat tire an hour from here? I sure hope that the amazing human that stopped to help me, number one, he helped me. But number two, I find out later, hey, that person used telehealth. Well, that's good. Maybe God is just blessing me because of that.
I wanted to highlight that because I come from, you know, the criminal justice world. And yeah. So I'm used to dealing with domestic violence offenders, but I also, you know, dealt with their victims. And so I think it's great that we're offering, you know, telehealth support, you know, virtual care for them, because there was a lot of times when I've spoken to these victims and they went to the emergency room, but they told their partner they were going to Walmart.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get in and out of the hospital or the ER quick enough. And it wasn't really something they needed emergency services for, but that was how they thought they could be seen the quickest.
Okay. But let me just clarify something. We are in conversations. We are mm-hmm. still not right. supporting them. And another thing that I have done in the past that don't imply the traditional ambulatory, inpatient, outpatient, is telehealth visits for inmates. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you are in a federal prison, state prison, or just detained in jail. Instead of the sheriff or the police, the officer bringing the patient to the hospital, we can do telehealth services. Mm-hmm. And it's something that helps a lot too.
Right.
The military is also doing this. I mean, there's so many things that we can do. Second opinion is just fantastic.
Right. And I mean, you can also look at it from a psychiatry standpoint, if they need medicine for mental illness, but also from a therapy perspective, if you just need somebody to give you better coping mechanisms. When I, you know, had my baby, I used that for postpartum therapy. I had someone that I talked to on a weekly basis, and it was because it was, number one, intimidating as a first-time mom to leave the house, but knowing that I could do that in the comfort of, and cry from the comfort of my home instead of going to an office and crying my problems. But it was still helpful to know that I could do that virtually.
I agree. I mean, just think about it. Think about it 10 years ago. Let's say, God forbid, that you had a child and that child needed, unfortunately, develop some type of cancer. And you live in Vermont, New Hampshire, I don't know, Washington State, California, Florida is still closed, Montana, and your child needs to go to St. Jude, for example. or to any other children's hospital to deal with cancer. In the past, without telehealth, you pick up a phone, you call, you send a bunch, you make a bunch of copies of your record, baby records, you get on a plane, you go, you get evaluated, you're like $10,000 down by that moment. And do you have $10,000 in your pocket? Because I clearly don't. But now, through telehealth, we can do appointments and we can see everything. And with the interoperability of multiple health system, multiple records, we can see the record of your baby, and we can see what is happening, and we can give you an answer pretty fast. So I feel that a lot of us humans, we are divided. We say, oh, we need to stop this AI. It will be like Terminator and Skynet. Yeah, no, it's not in that level. But, you know, everything that we have achieved as human is because people that take chances, people that take that leap of faith, and people that take risk. I do believe in a calculated risk. And maybe I'm stabbing myself in the back. I am not an early adopter, but I'm not that far from that. I want other people to do it first, and then I go and do my research. I think that we have amazing things coming in the future for us. But this is not an excuse, and this is completely unrelated. This is not an excuse for us to neglect our health. I find that we should, as humans, we should be active. Mm-hmm. We should be eating less processed food. And for everything else, well, we have telehealth and virtual care.
So in a previous episode that I had with Chase, we talked about, you know, AI. And one of the things that I found in research that it was specifically about breast cancer, but I think it kind of applies. And it was talking about how, you know, it could help with early detections in breast cancer, but it also had a false positive rate that was higher. But when we work with AI and technology, that's the best chance that we have, not just relying on people and not just relying on technology, but us working together has yielded the best results.
I agree. I feel that. I told somebody the other day, Lindsay, you need to drive an electric car. And I told him, listen, man, you don't have to choose fossil fuels or electric. Why can't we just use both? Like, use both, dude. We don't have the technology to sustain electricity on everything. So let's use both. So the same thing applies to healthcare. Mm-hmm. I think that we, and whoever say no is complete, I think it's wrong. I think we are in the really early stages of artificial intelligence. And like everything that is machine learning, you have to do trillions of interactions, trillions of research to learn, to do the proper machine learn. But from when that machine learn? From us humans. So we should work together. It's not, oh, everything's going to be AI. No, everything's going to be humans. Why can't we just be both? That's how it's going to be. And nobody talks about that. People just talk back things about AI, or they talk back things of, oh, I don't like this doctor, I don't like this one. Let's just coexist together and let's use both. Let's use the best of both worlds. But the way I see it is that you as a patient, you have to do everything that is on your power for you to get better. That's my opinion. So yeah, I think that I think both sources of knowledge should coexist together. Of course, I do think that we as humans, we need to have the last say on this.
I agree.
And we evaluate everything and we make that decision. Because, yeah, we're far from Skynet, but I don't want Skynet.
So lastly is a listener question. Do you think that work meetings should be virtual or in person, since you're the director of virtual care? What do you think?
Wow. You know, there are some meetings that I don't want to meet in person. You know, I like to talk and I like to build bridges with people. I feel, and when I get the chance, and people who hate me, I get in my car and I go and have a real meeting with someone. If I haven't interacted with you in person, I like to make that first interaction in person. There's times that I have back-to-back meetings that unfortunately have to be virtual, but my answer is it depends. It depends on the context. And I also think, and I'm going to say it, if you invite somebody from one team to that meeting, why on earth do you invite another person from the same team? Just have one person. Just have one person. You're welcome. So that's what I think. I would say I do half and half. The thing is that my office, Limsy, I don't have a glass door, but I would love to have a big glass door because a lot of my meetings are in IT and I'm like, we're in the same building. Why on earth are we having this meeting in computer? Let's just go and talk in person. Mm-hmm. Plus, I do feel that it's a different approach and you get more of your point when you're talking in person.
Right. I definitely believe hybrid, you know, you can have some virtual, some in person. It is the way to go. I've worked fully remote and it was very different. You only understood and got to know people on a very surface digital level. But now that I'm forced to come in and some days, you know, we still have meetings with IT and they're virtual. And some days we're over in the IT building. And so we just have them in the big conference room. It's better. But I also don't know a lot of the people over at IT. So I bring them donuts and bribe them and say, hey, this is me. Also, can you get this ticket done? And somehow my work magically gets done faster.
So. You know, and it's because you're building bridges. And that's the thing. You're building bridges. And I think that everything, I'm not saying build bridges to use people, but I'm saying build bridges to have a relationship. A real friend will help you because they want to help you, not because they gain something in favor. It's the same thing. If you're nice to me, you open the door, you say, hey, good morning. And I see that you need something, I will help you. Hey, are you okay? You need something? I'm not just being polite. Like if you ask me, yeah, I need $100. Well, no, I'm sorry. But if you ask me for something else, I can definitely help you.
I'm that type of person, you know, if you ask me to do something, it's in my wheelhouse. I'll do it or I can try to find you someone who can. But I also feel guilty when it's the other way around, asking somebody. So instead I'm like, can you do this? Here's some donuts.
Well, that's, I understand that. I'm not like that.
I don't know a lot of the people, and so I feel that's a way of maybe they'll like me if I buy them food. Because I would like somebody, maybe.
You know, but that's clever. I mean, if you buy me food, you're my friend for life. Like, it's the truth. And there's something that, for your listeners, if you ever want to come to Tupelo, Mississippi, and you want to hang around with Dr. Morales, I love bread pudding. I just love bread pudding. So if somebody give me bread pudding, they're in my heart.
I'm picky with bread.
To the end of days.
I'm like that with cheesecake, but I'm very picky with bread pudding.
I do like bread pudding. There's some food in IT. You should go. There's some food today. One department did something. It was just one department. It was not like an IT gig.
Oh, okay.
But it was next to my office, so I ate for free.
Well, that's all we have today. So I want to thank you again very much, Dr. Morales, for coming and talking to us. I'm sure I'll have you on again.
Right on. This is going to keep growing. I'll
bribe you with some bread pudding to come back.
Bring bread pudding. Friend for life. I feel thankful and humble that you guys thought about me. I'm genuinely happy of the thing that we're doing. I'm super glad with the team that we have here. I'm overjoyed about how this is growing. And, you know, I didn't say this, but I'm really fond of Tupelo, Mississippi. I'll tell you the truth, in a million years, I would have thought that I would want to move to Tupelo, Mississippi. And it's nothing against Tupelo, nothing against Mississippi. I never thought that I was going to move to Tupelo, Mississippi. And then I move here and my kids are happy, my wife is happy, I'm happy. The only bad thing is too many tornadoes, but that's it.
They are increasing. They used to not be like this when I was younger.
But I'm glad there's no traffic at all. Except the train, but thank you, Limsy and Chase, for inviting me to the podcast. I appreciate you both, and maybe I'll see you guys next time if you bring that bread pudding.
Thank you for listening. We are here to support you and are so glad you chose to spend time with us today. We hope this podcast helps you understand what connected feels like. Please don't forget to check back at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Castos for more episodes.